The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the New York Times. Now, before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, I want to remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles we are going to be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. With the arrival of October, we find fall in full swing. Cooler temperatures, fall color, and, we were going to say the season for fairs, but the COVID-19 pandemic has changed things, hasn't it? In fact, many fun events that take place during fall have either been canceled or rescheduled. As writer Elaine Glusick recently learned, wandering through corn mazes, picking pumpkins, and visits to wineries and haunted houses are still on the calendar, but social distancing and face masks are part of the plan. Her story, Fall's Almost Here, Can We Still Go Apple Picking?, appeared in the September 17, 2020 issue of the New York Times. Across much of the country, fall is the season of apple picking, corn mazes, winery harvest, and Halloween hauntings, luring day trippers and weekenders to rural areas. But if summer is any guide, many fall festivities may require more planning this year to avoid the crowds. While visitors may still launch a pumpkin from a catapult, pandemic restrictions will touch everything. Hayrides will now be socially distanced, and masked clowns will be poised to scare haunted house visitors from 6 feet away. Reservations in the orchards. Apple picking, pumpkin patch visits, and corn mazes are fall traditions at many businesses. In Hendersonville, North Carolina, 25 miles south of Asheville, the annual North Carolina Apple Festival celebrates the area's fruit growers and has in recent years drawn some 250,000 attendees to town. This year, the September event was largely canceled, but area orchards remain busy. Down are the tour bus groups and church groups, but we're getting a lot more families, said Leslie Lancaster, an owner of Granddad's Apples and Such, a 120-acre farm in Hendersonville that offers apple picking pecks from $11 and up and has a store and bakery. Everyone is trying to find something to do with their kids, she says. The orchard, one of 20 on the regional crest of the Blue Ridge Orchard Trail, isn't taking reservations, but is monitoring the number of visitors to ensure social distancing and recommending its slower hours early in the morning or late in the afternoon to avoid congestion. It runs a tractor-pulled train on the weekends, but has kept the jump pillow where children may collide closed this year. A lot of farms have gone to timed entries or tickets for a certain time frame to encourage crowd management, says Susie Spar, the executive director of the North America Farmers Direct Marketing Association, a nonprofit trade group. Admissions policies may vary state by or by county. In South Natick, Massachusetts, Lookout Farm is requiring reservations for apple picking and has shut down its train ride and play area admission $20, including a half peck of fruit. Pickers must wear masks, wash their hands before entering the orchard, use bags supplied by the farm, and refrain from eating fruit in the orchard. At Dr. Davies Farm in Congress, New York, about 30 miles north of New York City, reservations are strongly suggested for 30-minute windows, and visitors must buy a 7-pound bag each or a 25-pound bag for a group of up to 6 people, and prices vary. Carter Mountain Orchard in Charlottesville, Virginia, has implemented a ticket reservation system. Guests can choose from 3 time slots per day. We absolutely cannot accommodate the same number of people this year that we have in previous years, said Cynthia Childs, the owner of the orchard. Visitors can also drive through the 200-acre orchard and purchase ready-picked apples from their cars. Tickets aren't needed, but ordering in advance is recommended. The alterations are similar as you at pickup pumpkin patches, rather. Though it does not take reservations, Hank's Pumpkin Town in Watermill, New York, in the Hamptons, has added hand-washing stations and hand sanitizer dispensers across the grounds that include areas for apple picking and a corn maze. Admission to attractions starts at $10. Free admission to the pumpkin patch and pumpkins are sold by the pound. At Wickham's Land of Pumpkins and Cormais in Williston, Vermont, which opened on September 19th, the spacing between the pumpkin rows, like its corn maze aisles, are wider, and hand sanitizer is provided upon entrance. The corn maze admission starts at $5. Then we have some less confusing corn mazes in the news. Many corn mazes this year will have wider paths and additional passing lanes where maze goers can distance themselves from others at points where they must decide which way to go. Some are reducing the number of those decisions or eliminating dead-end options, according to Brett Herps, owner of The Maze, a company based in Spanish Fork, Utah, and that works with more than 280 farms in North America and Europe in designing and building its corn mazes, also pronounced maíz, if you'd like, which is more of the Spanish pronunciation. These are about 3 to 4 times the size of a Home Depot or Walmart, Mr. Herps said, noting mazes can run 300,000 to 600,000 square feet. I don't know of a business that can social distance better than we can, given that we're outdoors and have such a large footprint. Mr. Herps also operates Corn Bellies, a corn maze in Lehigh, Utah, that has partnered with Disney to theme its 2020 maze after the movie Toy Story. The admission starts at $13.95. Both the maze, opening September 25th, and the film turn 25 this year. To comply with pandemic-imposed capacity restrictions, most mazes require timed and ticketed admission this season. Near Fredericksburg, Virginia, Belvedere Plantation is selling timed tickets to keep its maze within the state capacity limit of 1,000 people and has made everything cashless except the animal feed dispensers that still take quarters. Again, admission starts at $13.95. Its 34 campfire sites are available by reservation for 4 hours at $75, though most attractions, including a pumpkin patch and a hayride, are included with admission. Then we have farm festivals downsized. Many farms that held fall festivals had to cancel or reduce them, often spreading more low-key celebrations out. Lawrence Orchards in Marion, Ohio, canceled its annual Apple Fest and replaced it with Harvest Saturdays throughout September and October with events including pumpkin painting and scavenger hunts. The admission is free. Fishkill Farms in East Fishkill, New York, has also scrapped its fall harvest festival weekends, which feature live music and face painting. But one celebratory touch remains in the form of a fiddler who roams the fields serenading customers. That was a way that we could maintain a little bit of festival atmosphere without creating a crowded congregation area around live music, said Joshua Morgenthau, owner of the farm. At Happy Day Farm in Monopolin, New Jersey, the annual fall festival will take place on select days through October 25th, but at half capacity and without activities involving contact, including children's pony rides and photos with the Pumpkin Princess. Admission there is $16. The corn maze route is a little wider, and the new hay wagons are 32 feet compared to the 20-footers used in previous years. Each activity features hand sanitizing stations and signage on social distancing. We've never had to wipe down a tetherball before, but this year we will, said Tim Stockel, owner of the 130-acre farm. In many cases, restrictions have led to new activities. These entrepreneurs have very creative minds, Ms. Sparr of the Farmers Association said, noting that many farms have added drive-through lanes to pick up things like flowers and donuts. Among them, Lehman's Green Apple Barn in Freeland, Michigan, offered drive-through cider sundaes in spring and a socially distant sunflower festival in summer. This fall, the U-Pick Farm is requiring time tickets between $4 and $6 to limit the number of people on the 85-acre farm to no more than 150. Visitors are asked to sanitize their hands before and after activities, and when each two-and-a-half-hour session ends, the proprietors will close for an hour to clean the playground, hayride, and picnic tables. We want to provide a place to feel safe and still create family memories, said Sarah Riesinger, a manager of Lehman's and a sixth-generation member of the family that runs the farm. Wine Country Harvest? Get a reservation. Fall is also high season for harvest visits to wine regions, and wineries are adapting to pandemic rules. Instead of canceling harvest events entirely, members of the Leelanau Peninsula Wine Trail near Traverse, Michigan, or Traverse City, we should say, Michigan, created a dispersed event called Harvest Days that runs throughout September. Now, ticket holders took self-guided tours and had access to toastings and other perks at 26 wineries, and the cost was $35. In Starlight, Indiana, Huber's Orchard Winery and Vineyards offers 30-minute walking tours and tastings in its winery and distillery on weekends. It started September 19th and continues through October 31st. It has limited capacity, and your entrance fee is $6 and a nickel. Visitors must remain 6 feet apart. Face masks are required for indoor tours and tastings. This season, the 600-acre estate also offers outdoor tastings of its wine and spirits on weekends. Tickets can be purchased on-site and include a fall harvest-themed glass. In the Finger Lakes region of New York, home to about 140 wineries, indoor operations are limited to half capacity. At Fox Run Vineyards, tasting are indoors and first-come, first-served. Flights start at $10, but most are entertaining visitors outdoors. Sheldrake Point Winery is offering flights, glasses, and bottle service on the patio and allowing guests to bring their own picnic. The winery takes reservations online and asks same-day visitors without one to call for availability. Now, we started with all reservations, but in so many cases, we found people enjoying the views and missing their next appointment, said Laurie Ellen Ward, the president of the Finger Lakes Wine Country Tourism Marketing Association. She added, "We encourage everyone to call, even if it's just 10 minutes ahead." Ghost in mask and drive-through frights. Fall festivities that include zombie chases, lunging clowns, and stalkings by bloodthirsty psychopaths are having a harder time adapting to virus constraints. "We thrived on big lines in front of the haunt that drew people in," said J.F. Storm, a co-host of the podcast Big Scary Show that covers haunted attractions, often called haunts. "The best actor would entertain guests and build up suspense. That can't happen this year. When it comes to personal protective equipment," he added, "mask and face shields are becoming part of the character." Capacity limits, social distancing measures, and sanitation requirements are forcing many seasonal haunts to cancel this year. According to Larry Kirchner, who runs the website hauntworld.com, which lists scary attractions worldwide, again, that is hauntworld.com. He also owns two haunted houses in the St. Louis, Missouri area, The Darkness and Creepy World, that opened October 2nd with adjustments like nightly sanitizing, confining actors to scare zones, and pinning back curtains that once guests reached through blindly to enter a room. Some of the biggest pop-up Halloween horrors, including Universal Studios' Halloween Horror Nights at theme parks in Florida and California, have been canceled. Terror Behind the Walls, the seasonal fright at the Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia, has been replaced with night tours, and it started September 18th, and that continues until November 15th, and aims for a quieter sense of creepy. There was no way to run an additional haunted house safely when so much of the excitement of a haunted attraction and the surprise of being closer to someone than you realize that startled scare, said Sean Kelly. He's senior vice president and director of the 10-acre former prison. It opened in 1829. With just 50 visitors per half hour permitted, night tours when floodlights sweep the grounds, and a silent 1929 film made at the prison flickers in a cell block courtyard, it all remains eerie. Many attractions are emphasizing safety via mobility. The Great Jack-O-Lantern Blaze, featuring more than 7,000 lighted pumpkins on the 18th century Van Cortlandt Manor in Croton-on-Hudson, New York, September 18th through November 21st, has reduced capacity by 67% with signs, distance markers, and social distancing ambassadors to keep visitors progressing safely on the walking path. Time tickets will be sold online only, and they start at $24. Some attractions are going to a drive-through model, including Headless Horseman Hayrides and Haunted Houses in Ulster Park, New York. It runs October 2nd through the 31st. The popular 65-acre attraction in the Hudson Valley will replace its hayride with a one-mile drive through the haunted grounds decorated with 1,000 carved and lighted pumpkins. Costumed actors will maintain 6-foot social distancing, and cars are also required to stay 6 feet apart. Tickets for this event start at $39.95. It'll be a visual experience until you get out of the car, said co-owner Michael Juby, noting that after the drive, visitors can park and walk through seven haunted houses with some safety modifications. In Orlando, a group of artists with extensive resumes at Disney World and other theme parks got together to create the Haunted Road, a 40-minute drive-through event in which groups of cars travel from scene to scene to watch a live-action play with original music and sound and lighting effects that recast the story of Rapunzel, set loose in a terrifying world. It began September 25th and runs through November 7th. Tickets are $15 and $30, or $15 to $30, I should say. The script was inspired by the restlessness the collaborators had experienced during the pandemic, and I guess still do. When we started thinking about the storylines with Cabin Fever, we selected Rapunzel, said Jessica Marico, the executive producer and creative principal of The Haunted Road. She's in a tower, and when she finally gets out, she enters a world unlike she's imagined it to be, running into crazy scenarios, characters, horror, and death. For terrorphobes, there's also a family-friendly daytime version. There you go. Wow. Wow. It's hard to believe that the COVID-19 can be outdone by some of these haunted features, huh? Well, travel typically involves a destination, right? But have you ever heard of a trip that went to nowhere? Well, The Flight Goes Nowhere and It's Sold Out is an article written by Teruro Zawa, and it appeared in the September 19th, 2020 issue of the New York Times. The editors prefaced this article saying people who fly, or miss flying rather, are rushing to buy tickets for flights that land in the same place they depart from. Let's see if we can learn some more. In August, Nasri Harif, a DJ at Crystal FM Radio in Brunei, set foot in an airport for the first time in 6 months. The experience, he said, was exhilarating. Sure, moving through Brunei International Airport was different, with masks, glass dividers, and social distancing protocols in place, but nothing could beat the anticipation of getting on a plane again. His destination, nowhere. Mr. Harif is one of thousands of people in Brunei, Taiwan, Japan, and Australia who have started booking flights that start and end in the same place. Now, some airlines call these scenic flights. Others are more direct, calling them flights to nowhere. I didn't realize how much I'd missed traveling, missed flying, until the moment the captain's voice came on the speaker with the welcome and safety announcement, said Mr. Harif, of his 85-minute experience on Royal Brunei Airlines. On its flight to nowhere, which the airline calls the Dine and Fly program, Royal Brunei serves local cuisine to passengers while flying over the country. At a time when most people are stuck at home and unable to travel, and the global airline industry has been decimated by the pandemic, flights that take off and return to the airport a few hours later allow airlines to keep staff working. The practice also satisfies that itch to travel, even if it's just being on a plane again. Although most people may think of flying as a means to an end, existing solely to get them from one place to the next, some say that it is an exciting part of the travel experience. For those people, flights to nowhere are the salve for a year in which just about all travel has been canceled, and people have been fearful of airlines not enforcing social distancing and mask-wearing rules. Royal Brunei has run 5 of these flights since mid-August, and since Brunei has had very few cases of the coronavirus, the airline is not requiring passengers to wear a mask, but staff members are. Earlier in the month, the Taiwanese airline EVA Air filled all 309 seats on its Hello Kitty-themed A330 Dreamjet for the Father's Day in Taiwan, and Japan's All Nippon Airways had a Hawaiian resort-themed 90-minute flight with 300 people on board. And on Thursday, September 17th, Qantas announced a flight to nowhere over Australia. That flight sold out in 10 minutes. So many of our frequent flyers are used to being on a plane every other week and have been telling us they miss the experience of flying as much as the destinations themselves, Alan Joyce, the chief executive of Qantas Airlines, said in a statement this week when that airline announced its 7-hour flight in October that would depart and land in Sydney. Tickets for that flight ranged in price from $787 to $3,787 Australian dollars, or about $575 U.S. to $2,765 U.S. It will take travelers around Australia, flying over the Northern Territory, Queensland, and New South Wales. The airline also recently brought back its popular sightseeing flights to Antarctica that don't actually land in Antarctica, but allow passengers to walk around and have different views of the continent. The tour company Antarctica Flights charters Qantas to operate the flights. Dozens of Australians took to the airline's Instagram to express a desire for more of these kinds of trips to be added. A handful of travel agents in India, Australia, and the United States said that their clients have been asking about flights to nowhere in the past 2 months as the reality that travel will not return to normal for some time has sunk in. Loveleen Arun, a Bangalore-based travel agent who designs luxury trips mostly for Indian travelers, says she's been hearing from antsy clients who wish there were such flights in India. One of my clients said just a few days ago, "All I want to be in a window seat and see clouds and go by. I miss that sight. I just want white, puffy clouds," Ms. Arun said. Some people just want to drag their bags through the airport and then go check them in. Most of Mrs. Arun's clients are well-to-do individuals and families who would find a trip to nowhere appealing if it was luxurious, something other travelers echoed. Before the pandemic, Christopher Malby-Tennan, a marketing manager who lives in London, traveled by plane regularly, both for personal and professional reasons. The thought of getting on a flight to nowhere would only be appealing, he said, if it were upscale and did not include the usual hassle of plane travel. The concept of going on a flight to nowhere isn't appetizing if it's the same rushed, cattle-being-thrown-in experience it is when you're going on a trip, Mr. Malby-Tennan said. If it changed and felt as if you were going on a spa date or checking into a luxurious hotel and you were allowed to stretch out, then it would make sense. When Nadia Hamid's parents forced her to join them on Royal Brunei's flight to nowhere, she thought the idea of flying above her home was ridiculous, she said, but she had a change of heart just a few minutes into the trip because it allowed her to see her home in a new way. Normally, when you're flying, you don't really know where you are, so it was nice to have someone contextualize things in our country and in Malaysia, and the views were really beautiful, Mrs. Hamid said. Kitty Chow, a spokeswoman for the Taiwanese airline Starlux, said that the airline has been working to make the flight to nowhere experience a luxurious one by allowing people to buy packages for the flight and a hotel stay. Since August, the airline has run 6 flights to nowhere and has been about a dozen more scheduled through October. Most of the flights have sold out within 10 minutes of being announced, Ms. Chow said, adding that wearing a mask and social distancing are mandatory on all these flights. "We try to provide a different and fun event at the boarding gate," Ms. Chow said. "We also arrange some special decorations in flight. And, of course, a special made giveaway to go with the theme each time is a must." Criticism of these flights has been intense, with environmental groups and travelers taking to social media to express their frustrations. They argue that an industry that had already negatively affected the environment before the pandemic is continuing to do so with these unnecessary trips, as they describe them. In 2018, global civil aviation accounted for 918 million tons of carbon dioxide, equal to the combined annual emissions from Germany and the Netherlands. Rob Jackson, an earth scientist at Stanford University, estimated that global emissions would fall 7% if lockdowns persist in parts of the world for the rest of the year. A spokeswoman for Qantas said in an email that it purchased carbon offsets to alleviate the impact of the 7-hour flight, and Royal Brunei Airlines said it is using an Airbus A320neo, which has fewer emissions than many other planes. While some people seek to travel in order to enjoy a special experience, something that's unique and not available just anywhere. Now, a good example is found in the June 29, 2020 issue of the New York Times, Swimming with the Sea Lions of Los Isolotes, is authored by photographer Benjamin Lowy, and is part of the Times' ongoing series, The World Through a Lens. As Lowy shares, sea lions are often referred to as dogs of the sea, and on a small island off the Baja coast, where the playful animals populate every outcropping, they live up to their name. At the onset of the coronavirus pandemic, with travel restrictions in place worldwide, we launched a new series, The World Through a Lens, in which photojournalists help transport you virtually to some of our planet's most beautiful and intriguing places. Now, Benjamin Lowrish, in this article, shares a collection of photos from an underwater shoot off the coast of Baja. Nestled off the coast of Baja California Sur, near La Paz, lies a string of islands in the Sea of Cortez, including Isla Espiritu Santo and Isla Partida, part of a UNESCO Biosphere Reserve and one of Mexico's leading ecotourism destinations. These islands, along with their surrounding reefs and outcrops, are home to countless forms of marine life. At the northern tip of the chain, just beyond Isla Partida, is a small, craggy outcrop, roughly a quarter mile long, called Los Islotes, or Isla Lobos. Here, where few people have access, lives a large colony of sea lions. I visited the area on one of my first underwater assignments after years spent covering war, politics, and sports. Diving there was a transformational experience. Alone, floating in the open water, I found peace among these playful animals, sometimes referred to as dogs of the sea. Sea lions really do seem like dogs. They play fetch with rocks, starfish, and the occasional bone, and they often seem enamored by the few humans who swim with them. They constantly nibbled at my fins or stared at their reflection in the dome of my underwater camera housing. Their evolutionary origin can be traced back to ancient bears and the mustelids, otters, weasels, ferrets that, in a reversal of terrestrial mammal evolution, returned to the sea and developed fins. Swimming around the circumference of Los Islotes is possible, though the water in some areas is quite shallow, and access is often restricted by tour guides. Young adolescent sea lions can be seen playing in the surf and sunbathing on rocks. The bark of dominant males echoes above and below the water as they patrol the sea for threats to the colony and to their rule. Above the water, the animals populate every rocky outcropping, lying prostrate in the sun. Each side of Los Islotes offers a different look at the sea lion's habits. Massive rocks jut from the seabed on the northern side, having eroded off the island long ago. The sea lions frolic back and forth in these underwater obstacles, chasing each other through rocky crevices. The southern side of the island is where the males sit and sunbathe. Territorial and ferocious, these gigantic males can be dangerous and should be given wide berth. Near the eastern tip of the island is a giant arch that rises from the sea. There, divers can drop down to 50 feet, stare up and watch the silhouettes of sea lions as they swim from one side of the island to the other. Perhaps most charming of all, hidden on the southern side of the islands within a small yet easily accessible underwater cave is a sea lion nursery. Small juveniles dart back and forth under the watchful eye of older females. Now, he took many photographs in these waters, along with some other friends, and he says, "I've yet to find a photographic subject that has brought me more peace and tranquility than swimming with the sea lions of Islotes." Oh, wow, what a great trip, huh? Well, that's it for today's episode of Armchair Traveler. Be sure to listen next time. Hope you've enjoyed your journey today. I'm Mike Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Comments and questions can be directed to 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.